You're listening to WRUU-LP, Savannah, Georgia, 107.5 FM, WRUU.org. We are Savannah Soundings, community radio with global soul.
Check, check, one, two. Look like a little country. Some rock and roll and blues. Cause we sure love playing for good people like you. Let me know if you can hear me. Check, check, one, two.
You are listening to Savannah Music Local and Sustainable, the radio show that features conversations with and the music of local musicians and traveling musicians performing in town. I'm your host, Dave Lake. Tonight on Savannah Music Local and Sustainable, I'm talking with singer-songwriter Brian Edwards. Brian will be performing at the First Friday for Folk Music concert on this coming Friday, June 5th, beginning at 7:30 p.m. at the First Presbyterian Church, Stewart Hall, 520 Washington Avenue here in Savannah. Welcome to Savannah Music Local and Sustainable, Brian Edwards.
Well, thank you for having me, and it's really nice to be here. It's great to be on a show that supports live music in the community.
And so let's talk a little bit about Brian Edwards. Tell me your musical journey.
It goes back to the first 45 I ever had by the Fab Four, and it was Please Mr. Postman. And hearing the song, it sparked something and started listening to pop music, and it was just a continuing education until I heard Bob Dylan and Nashville Skyline, and then the folk music and the ringing of the birds' 12-string guitar doing folk music really captured me. And then Crosby, Stills, and Nash come along, and the whole ballgame changed. It opened up so many vistas for people who wanted to sing and incorporate their own feelings into the music and such. And that was just a major ascendant at that time. It just took off from there. I was playing up and down the East Coast for years and years and years, and then I got sane and got into radio and made a career out of radio, supplementing it with the music. Through the years, I've been very, very fortunate to have worked with some great musicians, including here in Savannah at this upcoming show with Graham and Robert Cooper, the Cooper brothers here from Savannah. Just amazing musicians. Great to have them on stage with me. But radio also opened up some areas that I would never have thought that I would ever reach into, interviewing people who are large in the business, but who are also songwriters, who are also brilliant musicians. And it's just been a great ride, I'll be honest with you.
Well, let's go way back then to when you started listening to music, perhaps to your first 45. And when did you start to play music?
About 1973, I think. I was hanging out with a bunch of folks in a small coastal community. They said it was a large fishing community with a small drinking problem, but actually it was the other way around. But that's the way it is on the coast sometimes. But at this particular community, there was music through the community. There were up-and-coming rock bands. Jonathan Richman, who's a legendary 60s, 70s rocker, came out of San Francisco during those days, and he came out of that particular area. Boston, Massachusetts was a hot spot for music. Anything from Joan Baez and the Dylan and Eric Anderson route on the folk side to straight knock-it-dead rock and roll with Wendy Earle Williams and the Plasmatics. So you could run the gauntlet on any given night and see 3, 4, 5, 6 different acts if you wanted to, and not one would cross genres. It was wide-eyed experience for a young kid that was getting exposed to the music world.
And so you picked up the guitar, I presume?
I did. I said the fishing community, we'd sit on the town pier on Saturday nights, a bunch of guys with guitars and banjos and play tunes. And people would come by, and God, we were terrible. It was scary. But it was also interesting one particular night in this one particular harbor, to coin a Jimmy Buffett phrase. Two guys came up off the sailboat while we were playing. And, you know, they wanted to have a little nip of what we were nipping on. he asked if maybe they could play a couple of tunes. And, oh, sure. Hand them the instruments. And about an hour and a half later, they said thank you. And they introduced themselves as one Jeff Muldaur and one Amos Garrett. Goodness, these men can play guitar. So you never know who you're going to bump into.
Right. And so you started with guitar. Did you have any lessons or did you teach
yourself?
No,
never a lesson in my life. And it's been a long, hard road.
That's pre-internet. So did you just pick it up from people you were playing with?
Yes, exactly. And, you know, if you had to keep up. Learn fast, keep up, or go away. And so I learned to keep up. And it helped that I have been singing all my life. So being able to meld and blend the thing, it's served me well.
So did you sing then before you picked up the guitar?
Oh, yeah. Been singing since I was a little kid, singing in church. And it never went away.
And so the harmonies we'll talk about here it came from singing in church, hymns.
Some of it. I guess the initial foundation. But the harmony stuff definitely came from listening to the Beatles, the Birds, the Kinks.
Crosby, Stills, Nash.
Crosby, Stills, Nash. All of them, and all the other artists that would come, I mean, Steel Eye Span, if you're talking about Celtic acts. The vocals that Richard Thompson and Sandy Denny did with Fairport Convention, that kind of thing. I mean, just listening to vocals, Poco here in the States, the original Poco band. Those voices were just incredible. And as the offshoot went to the Eagles, I mean, it brings us to where we are today with someone like Vince Gill singing with the Eagles and just with mesmerizing vocals.
And so you then started playing out in clubs. Did they have any things like jam sessions there so that you could get some connections?
Not so much. You put a band together, you got halfway decent that you could go out and play in clubs, and then you drag all your friends in, and hopefully they'll keep coming after the third show. And in our case, it worked out in several different lineups. But we were okay. We had a lot of fun. People liked the music. But then, as is always the case, the music vibe changes. It lasts for a while, and then you just keep going on. I just love to play out, and I haven't been doing it for the last few years because I've been in transition here to Savannah and getting acclimated and finding out with the Savannah Folk Music Society. They've been so receptive and welcoming. I'm really thrilled that we're playing there, and it's a very, very aware audience from all different demographics. They know bluegrass, they know traditional folk, they're folk music aficionados, and they've studied it and learned how to play some of the 30s rare folk music that is almost lost. And we're finding that here in Savannah, the Savannah Folk Music Society is really keeping it alive, as are you here on the radio station.
It's a real issue across the board in terms of music, just about any genre, is that you need to have folks that keep the old music, and by old music, in the sense of folk music, we're going back into the 50s and maybe earlier. It's interesting to see where young people will glom on to what is 70, 80, 90 years old.
Exactly. And the other thing that gets me is pop songs that came up through the 50s, 60s, 70s that have long faded into obscurity and or oblivion, sometimes mercifully, are being resurrected on people's digital loops and their samples. Take Me Home, Country Roads. My goodness. You could go anywhere, and any performer that's playing out in some of the areas downtown, for example, they play that song, and the entire house sings it, and the entire house is under 40. It's amazing. It's a beautiful thing to see that artists who have written great songs now, possibly in their 80s, are seeing a resurrection of their material. I think it's thrilling.
And so then you started playing with others in terms of bands. How did you put a band together?
A lot of it just happened to be people of like minds and hanging out. And instead of just playing around bonfires over cold Budweiser, we decided, let's try to work something out here, see how it goes. Are you familiar with the Frank Zappa song, Joe's Garage?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
That's about covering it.
Very large, there was just enough room to cram the drums in the corner over by the Dodge. It was a 54 with a mashed up door and a cheesy little lamp, with a sign on the front said Fender Champ and a second hand guitar. It was a Stratocaster with a whammy bar. We could jam in Joe's Garage. It's my
Mama was screaming, his dad was mad, and we was playing the same old song. In the afternoon, sometimes we would play it all night long. It was all we knew, and easy too, so we wouldn't get it wrong. Even if we played it on the saxophone. We thought we was pretty good. We talked about keeping the band together, and we figured that we should. Cause about this time, we was getting the eye from the girls in the neighborhood. They'd all come over and dance around like. So we picked out a stupid name, had some cards printed up for a couple of bucks, and we was on our way to fame. Got matching suits, a beetle boots, and a sign on the back of the car, and we was ready to work in a go-go bar. We ought to take this man. Sign on the line for a real good time, but he didn't tell us when. These good times would be something that was really happening. So the band broke up, and it looks like we will never play again. Guess you only get one chance in life to play a song that goes like.
It went like that, and as the years went by, it got better. We started delving into writing songs because that was what you did back then. If you were in a band that wanted to move on and start playing the circuit, so to speak. And so we started doing that, and things gelled, and we started playing the circuit. It was pretty nice. The 80s were a very interesting time. We were very busy through that time. It was a fun thing to do, and we had reasonable success. Get to 1986, the Full Moon Review, the first version started, and that was a little three-piece, two acoustic instruments and a violin fiddle and two vocals, and that was that. And, oh, we toured up to the Canadian border, and that was a lot of fun. Small markets, and went our separate ways in the 90s. I went off to the Poconos and tried life there for a while, and that was pretty good. I did radio in the Poconos. It was a lot of fun. But I always had a hankering to come back to the East Coast, right along the coastline. And so we picked the band up the second time. Ran into my erstwhile partner, bumped into him at a gas station on my first day back in town, and, well, what do you think? Want to do this again? Geez, I don't know. I don't know. All right, let's go. And then that kept going right up until 2014. We released a couple of albums that went national and international. I guess we were real big with the Kangaroos down under. It's a lot of fun. I mean, there's a lot of tape in the can, but that'll never see the light of day. So I don't believe anyway.
And so when you start then touring, you started small, you started touring between Boston area and the Canadian border. So we're talking New Hampshire, Vermont?
Yeah, it's a small on a map, but there are some long drives in there.
Yeah, there are.
And lots of crazy places to go. Presque Isle, Maine being one of them.
And when you returned then to the Boston area, you returned basically to that small fishing village.
Yep, exactly. And we were doing well. We were doing well. And then my partner came down with ALS, and that was pretty much the end of that. Since that time, I assembled some bands, and we went out and did some cover stuff during the summers, and that was a lot of fun, and continued on with the radio career. That was a lot of fun, 60 hours a week for no heart. And everything they say is true. and retirement came back in December. And it was, let's see what we can do in Savannah. Maybe we can make a little noise in Savannah.
This is WRUULP, Savannah, Georgia, 107.5 FM, WRUU.org. We are Savannah Soundings Community Radio with Global Soul.
You're listening to WRUU, your local radio station, for people just like you, hosted by people from your community. The voices you hear are your neighbors, coworkers, and others from the Savannah and Lowcountry area. In other words, WRUU is your community radio station. Please help us by donating whatever you can to help your neighbors and friends stay on the air. Go to WRUU.org and support your local radio station. Any amount is welcomed. Thank you for your support of WRUU.
The Savannah African Art Museum will host its annual Juneteenth celebration on Saturday, June 13th, from 11 a.m. to 4 p.m. at 201 East 37th Street. This free, family-friendly event invites the community to honor the past, celebrate progress, and reflect on the cultural significance of Juneteenth through art, storytelling, and shared experiences. More information is available at www.savannahafricanartmuseum.org. A new exhibit focusing on the seven brave women who reshaped Savannah when they saved the Davenport House in 1955 is open on May 14th. This exhibit at the Preservation Center, 323 East Broughton Street, Savannah, runs through December 2026 and explores the living experiences and the convictions that compel these women to serve the community. More information can be found at myhsf.org.
This music is often called classical music, but remember, Mozart, Beethoven, and Liszt were the rock stars of their time, so I simply call it great music. I'm your host, Dave Lake, and join me for four centuries of great music, with new episodes each week on Sundays from 3 to 5 p.m. We also have encores of these episodes on Saturdays from 3 to 5 p.m. from mid-June to early December.
Welcome back to Music Local and Sustainable, and I'm your host, Dave Lake. Tonight on Savannah Music Local and Sustainable, I'm talking with singer-songwriter Brian Edwards. Brian will be performing at the First Friday for Folk Music concert on this coming Friday, June 5th, beginning at 7:30 p.m. at the First Presbyterian Church, Stewart Hall, 520 Washington Avenue here in Savannah. And so, let's dive into some music, and the music we're going to be talking about is the Full Moon Review. Can you tell me about the band?
Yeah, I put that band together, the first time through with J. Matthew Larson, Jim Larson, from Denison, Texas, via Marshfield, Massachusetts. And we fell together again, and went into a studio. We were very, very fortunate to get a studio that was ours. It had the analog 36-channel board that was in the Cars studio. Synchro Sound in Boston was the board that they recorded all their records on prior to them being released. It was pre-production. It wasn't final production. And so we had that, and we just lucked out. All kinds of top-of-the-heap mics and Pro Tools. Okay, let's go. So we woodshed it, and we came out with this first album here. It's called Sabout Time, because it was. And as I said, we received quite a lot of airplay. It fostered some larger performances for us in larger venues with national or regional touring artists. And yeah, it was produced by a fellow who won a Latin Grammy. And we were very grateful to have him in this program as well.
How would you describe the band?
It's Americana, and it was Americana when the stuff was released, when Americana was really just beginning to be recognized as a genre here in the States. But it's rockier in some aspects. It's country in some aspects. So there is such a divergent meld of styles that came together in this, and we think it came together in a pretty good blend. The second album, some change in personnel, and it's a lot more rock-oriented. There's more focus on production. I'm pretty happy with that one, too.
Well, to be honest, I'm more familiar with the second album. But let's talk a little bit about this first album. And so, again, the first album is?
It's About Time.
Just pick a song off the album and let's talk about it.
All right, When You're Down is the song off of this album that I thought was a hit. Jim wrote it. It just it came into the studio one day when we were doing pre-production work on some other stuff. And Jim was just noodling around here on the song, and he said, sit down. And I generally don't follow direction, but he was ardent enough so that I did. And he played this song, When You're Down, and damn near knocked me off the chair to hit the floor. That would have been a big dent. And so we played this song, and everywhere we went, it was great. People loved it. They wanted to know the story on it. I think today, if I can get it into the right hands, it would be a hit for someone today. It's demographic bending and definitely genre specific. It's a definite country tune, When You're Down.
So talk a little bit about the lyric.
It's when you're down, when you're lonely. It's one of those type of country tunes. Somewhat of a lament with a little bit of hope.
And with country instrumentation?
Yeah, no steel or anything like that. But there is, the guitar solo to me is a little bit more edgy than straight country.
When you're down, when you're lonely, when you're feeling like your world's about to end, I'll be there if you'd only open up your shuttered heart and let me in. I will take away your trouble, I'll wipe every tear away, I'll come running on the double every time you call my name. When you need a heart to cling to, when your eyes are filling up with bitter tears, I will come. Wipe every tear away, I'll come.
And so is there something from this album that is more folky?
Yeah, I mean, a little bit more folky. Yeah, it's a waltz called Who is the Man in the Moon. I wrote that song coming off a heartbreak on the full of the moon, driving along with a friend of mine right along the beach, and the full moon rising out of the water as it is oft does here on the East Coast. And during the breakup process, the one who got away said I had an evil black soul. I was telling my friends, the man in the moon there? See, that me. I'm the man in the moon. She said, yeah, with an evil black soul, write a song. 20 minutes later, who is the man in the moon?
On an early spring night, there's a sad winsome smile. When the full moon shines there through the trees, how it lights up the night, make everything seem alright. And the man in the moon, there's me. What he's seen through the years, all the joys, all the tears, it's a wonder.
And so would you bring then the song to the band and you'd work through it, or did you pretty much bring the final song?
No, I brought the structure of the song. The structure of the song just felt like it was there. So I brought it in and the band arranged it. Instrumentation, who's playing what do they want to play on it? How do we want to arrange the vocals? That was all part of the production process. It's a nice little song. It's a nice little waltz.
So in the evolution of the band, as we were talking before, the band sort of came and went and then reformed. So this album was with the first version of the band.
It was the first version of the album band.
Okay.
The other band was just a three-piece, okay. No bass, no drums. God knows what we were thinking.
And so you'd had more players to do the albums?
Yes. On a couple, and we had some local hot shots come in with some backup vocals, but the instrumentation is all us.
And the second album is entitled One Last Shot. That sounds sort of a final.
Yeah, well, we pretty much had an idea that we were heading down that road. And on the album cover, we're all drinking shots of milk. Yeah, and this one, we had a change of personnel. We actually had a guitar bass player come in who had been out on the road with an Aerosmith tribute band for a couple of years. And so he was a rock and roll guitar player and a rock and roll bass player. And boy, he brought some rockin' edge to what we did, that's for sure. And he was also a pretty good songwriter. So we had, at that point then, we had three solid songwriters in the band.
A Aerosmith tribute band.
Yeah, called Draw the Line. They're out there now. They're still out there, and they're still doing it. And remarkably, well, I don't suppose it's too stunning at this stage of the game, but they sound better than Aerosmith.
Yeah, that takes me back, because at my first radio job, it was this new group that's coming, Aerosmith. That was in the 70s.
Yeah, Toys in the Attic.
Yeah, and so they have tribute bands. Even that early, they have tribute bands, because we're talking about the 80s here, right?
Yes. The Blushing Brides for the Stones.
And so on the second album, One Last Shot, it starts off with a really interesting song, and this song is called Winds of Change. And I really like the metaphor that you have on this song in terms of the idea that wind is knocking at the door, or that the wind is change, and change is knocking at the door, and things are not going to be the same.
This song came about, I wrote it with Susanna Bullock, and she came up with an idea, as she did on a couple other songs that are involved on that album. She came up with an idea during a howling nor'easter, and I mean a howling nor'easter, power went out, and no generator, of course, being of hardy stock, how delusional. But no generator, so no power for a couple of days. And the wind, the difference between a cane and a nor'easter is marked. Canes, you hear that sound, and it's that high-pitched sound that you hear with the cane. You don't get with the blizzard. The blizzard is a much larger storm, but you still get 90-mile-an-hour wind, and the sound is more like a banshee's keen, the Celts would say. And it's unbelievable how it sounds. So she came up with this idea about, boy, that wind sounds like it's bringing us a big change coming. And off we went. And it took us a while, but this is the song we came up with. And the band, when I brought it to them on one guitar, it just didn't have that same pop. And the boys put it together. And our drummer, Mel Shaw, he's... You ever want the quintessential drummer? He's the man. In appearance, in style, in everything he does. And he said, this song has to rock. And he made it rock. I'm very happy with it. I like the way it turned out.
Well, you have the lights going out, and there was nothing there, no TV, no more. But that's when it hit you that you should be loving that baby who's there no more.
Exactly right. Glad you saw that.
Thank you.
You have to have lived in that area to really appreciate a nor'easter and the effects that a nor'easter can have. Having lived in that area myself during the late 80s and the early 90s, we lived down in Plymouth.
America's hometown.
Yeah. The complete other end of the coast there from probably your small fishing village, which my guess is it's just north of Boston.
No, it's south of Boston, Scituate.
So that's on the way to Plymouth.
Yes.
And so when the winds blow in off the Atlantic, or in our case, off the bay, we were sitting right on the bay, and we were sort of at the peak of the hill overlooking Sagamore Beach.
Oh, wow. Yeah, you were getting some wind.
So we were getting some serious wind. And when we knew those storms were coming, we did everything we could to prepare.
Oh, yeah, you had to. Right down the street from where you were was the Sandcastle Lounge, and that place, we played there many times over 25 years because every single winter storm after 1978, the thing would get wrecked. They'd have to close down for the spring, open up in the summer, party on, boom, do it all again for about 30 years. And I don't think that it operates now after the last winter's debacle that up there.
Yeah. We actually worked in Boston, and my wife held the record in terms of coming home, because one nor'easter as it was blowing up, the normal hour, 20-minute drive roughly, turned out to be up more than a five-hour drive coming down. Yeah.
All hung up on Route 3 southbound from the River Street Bridge down past 139.
Exactly. Don't miss those places.
No, and I certainly don't. And the thing that was funny was when we had, it was 2 winters ago, when we had 4 or 5 inches of snow overnight here in Savannah. It was nuts. Neighbors were out, and they didn't have shovels because you don't see 4 inches of snow here. Kept telling everybody, don't worry about it, don't worry about it. The sun will melt it. Didn't melt for 4, 5, or 6 days because the temperature never went up. And so it was just brutal to get around. It's a whole different animal down here when the snow comes and the ice comes. And that first day I went out, of course I went out driving in it. I haven't seen snow in a few years. Let's go. And got out onto the Truman. And the ramps going up to the Truman were horrific, and the Truman itself was horrific. There's just nothing you can do until the sun melts it. But I think it's better that way. You don't have all the liquid and all the chemicals that run off into the aquifer.
Yeah. One of my favorite cuts is about halfway through in the album. Again, we're talking about the second album of Full Moon Review, and that is One Last Shot. And that is Gone.
That's a tremendous song. As a matter of fact, I just in the last couple of days have revisited that song. I haven't played it in years. It caught my ear, too, just this past week. I was listening to the record, and, ooh, I think I remember how to play it. And we did a video on that, and that's out there. It's
somewhere floating on the interweb.
Yeah, it does show up periodically by the Full Moon Review. And it's just a catchy little tune. The lyric and original version of the song was much different. It was all electric. It was more of a droning thing. And we took it and said, no, we can't do that. But we came up with this rhythm thing and slapped it to the lyric and fit it together. And pretty good. It was a group effort on this one to get this song together. It was one of the easier ones, believe it or not, to put together recording-wise, because we recorded it all live. The only overdubs were for leads and for solos and maybe a couple of vocals here, but this was all done live in the studio. This was one of the fun ones to play. It was just an awful lot of joy in the song, even though the topic is a little dark.
My first note of this was, Boy, this is really an upbeat tune for such a depressing condition that this poor girl is in.
Yes. But that was also part of how it came together because, as I said, the original version, all electric, droning, dark.
Right.
Not positive in any way. At least this version has some hope to it. And that's the music side of it.
Because she's looking to be a girl living in a dream.
Right.
Which is seemed positive right off the top end, but then it's
her
a very complicated
life.
Yeah.
You know, it's just like, and there it goes from there. If you listen to the lyric, it's a story it's a cautionary tale, really, is the way I look at it.
She used to be carefree, but she's barely holding on.
Right.
And she says to me a lot, her independence is gone. And it was that the relationship she was in now that caused that change because she lost all her friends.
No, I don't think it's a relationship she's in now because I don't think she's in the relationship now. It's something that she has just come out of and is here. Oh, my, this shock. And not understanding really how it got here.
Yeah, and like you say, I mean, when you have the chorus of, you know, all her friends that she used to know, all the places they would go.
See, all the places they would go.
They would go. Right. Her and their friends.
Yes.
She loved to be a girl living in a dream. She's complicated life.
Well, and there was another song on this album when we were talking about the Nor'easters and the first song, Winds of Change. The immediate thing I thought of was actually a later song on the album, and This Is Not Yet Spring.
Yeah, I love that song. Hopefully that'll be in the rotation of Friday night. That one came about staring out the window one bleak February morning. It was gray with a foot and a half of snow on the ground. The temperature was 8 degrees. And thinking, oh my goodness, spring is so far away. And not yet spring. Just thinking of the Green Bay Packers with, what was that, John Facenza's voice? The frozen tundra of Lambeau Field. And I figured, all right, how can I fit that in here? I don't know, this one just kind of rolled. I caught the rhythm part on it and brought it in. And our rocker, John Finity, he said, oh, I got this. And off we went. I had things to do. Everybody had to go to work, come back 2 days later. And he said, listen, he had put down all the parts on it in the rough cut. And, oh, there's the song. Let's do it. And we ultimately pretty much recorded it the way he had laid it out, but everybody playing their own instruments.
And for those who aren't familiar with New England, spring does not come until May.
Spring just came 2 days ago when it went up to 80 degrees. The beaches were packed. I have camera shots up there from the traffic world. There's a shot of one of the beaches, and 82 degrees, it says right there, water temperature 51, and there's people in the beach. And I says, I remember that ankle-breaking cold, but that's never going to be on my plate ever again.
And in Not Yet Spring, often you'll have the late storms. You'll have that total gray time, and then you'll have a late storm blow up.
I think the latest storm that I ever saw up there was a howling squall line, I guess it was, on May the 10th. And there was hail. There was 4, 5, 6 inches of snow, and the next day it was 55 degrees. It felt like a heat wave. No, I'm much happier in Savannah.
That makes both of us. And then also in this song, Not Yet Spring, and what triggered my thought about this song was your comment about the banshee scream.
Being raised in an Irish Catholic family, you hear things, stories that may be apocryphal, may be fantasy, could be real with a little dose of realism. The banshee is one of those things. Banshee, a forebearer of death. And if you hear the banshee, that means that death is imminent. But it's a sound. It's a keening sound.
Nothing warm. Gotta break the back of this polar vortex. What we need is a big old East Coast storm. A bitter breeze blows across the frozen tundra. An icy finger freezing where my heart used to be. If I could find a way to keep from. Yeah.
Tonight on Savannah Music Local and Sustainable, I've been talking with singer-songwriter Brian Edwards. And Brian will be performing at the First Friday for Folk Music Concert on this coming Friday, June 5th, beginning at 7:30 p.m. He'll be doing the first set of two sets. And this is at the First Presbyterian Church, Stewart Hall, 520 Washington Avenue in Savannah. And I want to thank you so very much, Brian, for being on the show tonight.
Well, thanks for having me, and thanks for supporting live music in this community, because without it, truly, it's not the same world. It really isn't. Live music is critical to the well-being of the soul.
This has been another edition of Music Local and Sustainable, and I've been your host, Dave Lake. Save this time for another show next week.
Well, I know we ain't headed for the Hall of Fame. Gonna give it what we got, man, it ain't no shame. Let me know if you can hear me. Check, check, one, two. Let me know if you can hear me. Check, check, one, two.